Gossip.
Gossip, liar.
Okay.
Can't keep a constant, that's kind of like gossip.
What's that?
Ugly.
That's what I said.
I think I forgot to write it down, though. Okay.
Okay. No, just look at that. Some of those you would care about, others you wouldn't care about one whit. People are different. I mean, it's just amazing. People are just very different.
And they say something about your...
Yes, and what...
Just as these, which are tough to read because we're conserving paper here. And these are the things you said last night would be the way you would receive the compliments you would like to receive. Keep both the compliments and the insults in mind as we continue to talk about type.
Yeah. If you ever do a private interview on type, that probably is something they'll ask you because that tells a lot about who you are. Let's see here. Pull up a chair. No, not yet.
Okay.
Tape people. Remember the books in the library? Enneagram Made Easy, which is just a lot of general information to help you find your type. Are you my type? Am I yours? If you've been married 50 years, don't worry about it, but it might help, yeah.
What if you feel like you've been married 50 years?
Yeah. You're not going to be married long.
We can talk after this hour.
Enneagram of parenting for those intractable kiddos of yours. And this one is the Helen Palmer Enneagram in Love and Work, which is also relationships and work relationships. What happens in the office? Relationships between staffs and so on. So that's advance announcements. New people here tonight that were not here last night?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, goodness, yes. Okay, people who were not here either last night or the night before? Okay, so this is all brand new? Okay. I hope you'll get a green sheet to have in your laps, those of you who are brand new. How many of you
don't have
back there? Okay, you don't pass that.
Are we supposed to get in there?
Somebody wants to share.
Somebody close to you could share the green sheet and look on with others.
Okay, very good.
Okay. Anybody wants to quick check out one of these for tomorrow? It's here and it might be gone in a while. All right. Folks, roll the tape. This is the third session of the Enneagram. Who am I? Roy and Mary Nilsson. Welcome. Why don't we begin with a wonderful scripture text that I just discovered today. I was thinking about Enneagram knowledge and about how important knowledge is. And so I went to the book of Proverbs, which is the book that spends a lot of time talking about the importance of wisdom, the importance of knowledge. And I found there, lo and behold, also a tree of life. So it all ties together. So let me just read this for you. Happy are those who find wisdom and those who get understanding. For her income is better than silver and her revenue better than gold. She is more precious than jewels and nothing you desire can compare with her. Long life is in her right hand. In her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who lay hold of her. Those who hold her fast are called happy. Shall we pray? Spirit of the living God, Spirit of knowledge and of truth, Spirit of compassion and of grace, we pray for your presence here in this place, working in the minds and hearts of these dear people who are courageous enough to come, to open their minds and open their hearts and look deep within. And we thank you for that courage you have given them. For those who are afraid, we ask for courage. Comfort those who are sad. Give an unquiet heart to those who are set. For all of us, give us what we need so that we can grow and become all that we can be. And all for the common good. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
We want to just do a little, what when I teach writing, I call mixing metaphors. But now that I'm not teaching writing, I'm just going to call it a metaphoric shift. And that's an appropriate thing to do, right? Okay.
You're in charge.
I'm in charge. So we've talked about this, the gifts, the divine gift that we reflect into the world as a part of the image of God. And tonight we're going to shift the metaphor, and we're going to think of that as a seed, that each of us is given a God seed within, a beautiful God seed within. And I was trying to kind of press the metaphor a little bit, and I thought, you know, the eights, these power people, maybe the seed is like an oak. And for the fours, maybe the seed is like a weeping willow. And for some, maybe like a flowering almond. Different seeds, different trees, and yet they're all God seeds. And it's our task and our delight and our joy to allow that seed to grow to its fullness in our lives and in us. This is a seven thing. I just go blank every now and then. It'll come. Okay. What we tend to do as this seed begins to grow in us, it is a very fragile little sapling. And when we're young, we absolutely have to do something to protect that tree. We absolutely have to. Nobody gets by without having to protect that God seed, that God tree within them. And so we build something around it. We build a barrier around it. And that barrier becomes our personality. And that's what we become. That's what we are. That's what we look like. And what the Enneagram has noted is that we build the barrier out of so it's a look-alike to the tree. So these wonderful eights who are an oak tree just take slabs of thick, hard oak and build their barrier, you see. And it takes a jackhammer or a ram to knock it down. Our oldest son is an eight. And he was a tough, tough, tough kid. And there are some places back here, I think. If you want to crawl over here, folks.
Yeah, there is one place over there.
One
up
here. One up here. Great seat
one over
up
there.
In front.
That's right.
Whole bunch up on the wall.
Upstairs, yep. And when he ended up as a 17-year-old in drug treatment, it took them 2 weeks to just hammer down that wall, that hard oak wall that he had built around the beautiful oak tree that was him. And once it was down, then he could be, you see. So we all do that in one way or another. That's what we become. And that the tree that is the God seed within us, the Spirit of God is so willing, so eager, so anxious to help us let it grow. So we always have a companion, we always have a helper in our efforts to let that God seed within us grow. So for those of you who missed last night, Roy's going to do a quick review, and then we'll move on with a ton of stuff that we're going to plow through tonight.
Just review this very quickly for those who have not come here.
Okay, go ahead.
For those who are new to this class, who weren't in the first or second session, this green sheet is very important. And if you would take it in your hand, if you don't have one, share with somebody.
Snatch it out of the lap of somebody who looks like they've been here before.
In the first session, what Mary was really talking about was how all of us reflect the image of God in some way. And in the Enneagram system, Ennea is the Greek word for nine, there are nine basic ways in which we reflect the image of God, in which we bear the reflection of God in ourselves, in which we have a gift of God. So this little piece on the back page, titled In the Divine Image, shows the various faces of God that are prominent in each of the nine personality types. Okay? So you are a gifted person. You reflect God's image. Carry that with you. Last night, I talked a little bit about the history of the Enneagram, and the roots of the Enneagram go back way to ancient times. But the Enneagram has always been an oral tradition. Nothing has been written down. And it wasn't until really the 1950s that tradition began to be written down by a Bolivian psychiatrist named Oscar Chazo, and then Chilean psychiatrist named Naranjo. And they began to put together this ancient symbol, which comes out probably the Mideast, maybe Afghanistan, maybe Turkey sometime. And they began to adapt this nine-point system and symbol to personality type. And that's kind of just a brief history. There isn't a lot because a lot had nothing had been written really before the 1950s. But it is being used today extensively in spiritual circles, especially by the Catholic tradition, the Jesuits in particular, and then also by many people who are in psychology and psychiatry in this time. So that was one piece. The Enneagram is kind of a mystery. And then I talked, as the second part of last evening, about the mystery that we are constantly living with. Namely, and I used Paul's words from Romans 7:15, the good that I would do is what I don't do, and the evil that I wouldn't do is what I end up doing. What is it in our life? What is it in our woundedness, for we are all wounded people? That too is a mystery. What is it in us that puts us in that kind of situation? So we begin to demonstrate through our ego in the world this kind of woundedness. It's a mystery that we need to probe and to explore. And that's kind of a quick review. Mary's now going to take us into looking very closely at each of these nine personality types.
Okay, are you ready to go here? We're going to start with one of the triads, and triad is a word that you're going to have to get used to hearing about in Enneagram language, because as the theory has evolved, it has become clear that there are three basic triads. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, 9, 1. Somebody came up to me and asked me last night, how can anybody be so stupid as to start numbering with 2 on this on this sheet?
They were Lutheran.
And somebody that wanted order. And the reason is that this is one triad, this is one triad, and this is one triad. There are certain things that the people in each triad have in common. And I'm going to start out with this triad, tell you a little bit about what the triad, these three types have in common, and then go through each of the types. And I decided to use the pedagogical method, if you want to call it that, of tying a person into each type and telling you a little bit about a person so that you get a feel for a person. rather than just going through words and names. The twos, threes, fours are called the heart center. Somehow they lead with their heart, they feel. If you listen to their language, somebody in this tribe will often say, well, I just feel so bad, or I'm feeling great today, or I'm feeling like this is a wrong place to be, or it's just that kind of feeling language. They're always feeling things. If I say that with a bit of sarcasm, it's because I can't get at my feelings very easily. These people are also called, the basic thing underneath all of this is a kind of anxiety about image. And it plays itself out very differently in these three types, very differently. But they each give to the world a lot of power to determine how they feel about themselves. They just give to the world a lot of power to determine how they feel about themselves in different ways, in very different ways. The third trait of this type is that they are, it's called the relating. I guess that's enough. So all of these have that in common. One of the things that's sort of interesting is that the center point in each of these tends to repress the main. So these people are the feeling people. You wouldn't really know it if you were living with a three. They don't seem like feeling people. Sixes don't seem like thinking people. And nines don't seem like gut energy people. You know, it just doesn't seem like it because they sort of repress that energy. But anyway, so that's what these three types have in common. So now let's start talking about these types. Classic examples of a two. Do you remember what we talked about with a two? The twos are given the gift of caring, and they become the people who just have an instinct for how to take care of people. They love to give advice. They just sort of know before you know what you need. If you've ever lived with a two, it's just kind of wonderful for a while, and then it gets just sort of a little overbearing because they just always know before you know what you need. And Desmond Tutu would be a classic example of a two. Eleanor Roosevelt, Mother Teresa would be sort of the paradigm. People who just give in a totally altruistic and loving way. That would be the highest energy, the most healthy energy, two energy in the world. I want to tell you about a friend of mine who was named Nancy. Not you, don't panic. Not you back there either, don't panic. A different Nancy. Who was a part of our Shalom groups in Iowa City. And she was the nicest person you'd ever want to meet. And in the church circles, she was always giving Christmas presents to people. She was bringing food to people who were sick. She was tending to, we had an associate pastor at the time with small children. She was always going over and babysitting for the children. Just always had an instinct for what people would need and was just there to do it. Well, if any of you are that type of people, what happens? To people that are always just giving like that. What happens?
You burn out.
Yep. And what?
Resent.
Yeah. And you just get angry because nobody appreciates you. They just start to expect it, right? They just expect. I just expect my two friends will always remember my birthday. I never remember theirs. I can't keep track of anybody's birthdays. But they always remember mine. Because that's what twos do. And And Nancy went to an Enneagram retreat about five years ago, I think. And she wanted to be a nine. It's just like everybody's a wannabe of something else. She just wanted so badly to be a nine, because nines are also very nice people, but they're kind of content. They're kind of easy people, you know? And if she was going to be a two, she had to face the fact that she was doing all these good deeds that she did for very self-centered and very manipulative reasons, that she wanted something back. She wanted to be appreciated. She wanted to be pulled into the inner circle. She wanted to be a part of things. And it was just absolutely excruciatingly painful for her to admit that she wasn't just good, you know, that she wasn't just a nice person. Who's the classic biblical character? Two. The Good Samaritan. But the Good Samaritan was a healthy two. He did what he could do, and then he left the guy. He didn't stop his trip. He kept going. He didn't change his plans. You know, he didn't sacrifice his whole life. He was a healthy two. He saw a need, he did what he could do, and then he let it go. And that's the way twos can be when they're very healthy. If you'll look at this green sheet, or if you don't have it, I'll just read it to you. The twos at their most healthy self tend to be wonderful, altruistic, giving, loving, instinct for caring for people, just like that. Yes. But then they can get into the caretaking thing. They can get in. I mean, any type can become codependent, or any type can become alcoholic. But twos can get into codependent kind of behavior really fast, because that's what they do. They take care of people. And the strings get attached. They want something back. They get angry when they don't get it back. Twos generally are wonderful parents of small children. And the rub comes when the kids start getting minds of their own. And all of a sudden, mom isn't so great anymore, because mom wants something, wants her due. So that's a little bit about what twos are like. When a two is living in their woundedness, living with this big shield around them, with a thick shield around them, they think they know what's best for other people, and they tend to insert themselves into other people's lives all the time. And when they become really healthy, they allow others to walk their own paths, and they claim a vision for themselves. Now, a lot of people in the world of a two will want a two to not stay very healthy. And I remember the jolt that I had when Nancy was at my house helping with a wedding that I was throwing in our backyard for our daughter. And she had agreed to come and work through the noon hour, the lunch that we were serving for everybody. And then that was over, but I still had a ton of work to do. And Nancy just said, "Well, I've done what I can do. Goodbye." And I said, wait a minute, stop being so healthy, you know? I was the one that taught you to say no, and don't do it to me, you know? Twos start to say no. Twos start to say, "I'm sorry, I have other plans. I'm sorry, I need to go and take an art class." And it's like their world just gets angry with them, because they've always been there. The churches depend on two energy, and twos get so burned out in churches. And they think they're being such good Christians, and they're really just being unhealthy twos, you know? And it's just sort of sad. Okay, threes. The threes are the people in the middle of this triad. And if you can remember that their gift was the gift of being able to do things, to really get things done, just an instinct for being able to get things done. But what happens when the shield goes up on that, and when the defense goes up, is that the drive becomes to be successful, and even more important, to be seen as successful. So they work their tails off to climb the ladder, and if they don't get quite as far, then they present themselves as being higher up than they are. You know, the goal is to just be successful and be seen as successful. And though both of those two are important, but the being seen as successful is even more important than the being successful. Twos can be extremely successful, and because they've got a real competitive edge, they love to win, and they've repressed this heart energy. And so if you're married to a three, you're probably really frustrated because that three is just out there being successful. And you don't think they love you, they don't think they care about you, you know, they don't think, you know, it's just kind of, and yet they are being, well, successful at what they do. They become status-seeking kinds of people. The three that we know that is a wonderful example of a three, and I had known so many kind of bad examples of threes that I just sort of like, ooh, who would ever want to be a three? But we came to St. John's in Des Moines, and Roy's business manager is a three. And that church just hums. And it's hummed for 18 years because she's so good at what she does. And it's a great big church. And she takes care of the finances. She I don't know what all she does, but she she just sort of gets things done. And yes, there are times when she can get overwhelmed and it can get to be too much and all of that kind of stuff. And yet this organization, this huge church is works as an organization because Ruth is the business manager and she's a three. And she stands at the core, and all of her self-image is dependent upon her being able to get things done and doing them well and being successful. And she does it. And she's most of the time very beautiful in the way she does it and not self-promoting and self-aggrandizing, which a lot of threes can get into. So she's just... I was just very happy to meet her because it gave me a new vision of how good, healthy three energy and how important that energy can be in any kind of an organization. You've just got to have that three energy. People with just an instinct for seeing how to do things and how to get it done quickly. As threes become less healthy, they can become very deceptive because they just need to be seen as something. They just need to be seen as something, and whether they don't exactly even know they're lying because they've deceived themselves. They've deceived themselves because it's so important to them. Some threes that you might know. This is all risky business to be naming people in public life, and there's all these arguments about whether it should be done or not. But I think it does help to kind of get an image of people out there that are these types. They say Jimmy Carter is a three. Meryl Streep. Jane Pauley, O.J. Simpson. he was very successful for a long time. So that's the three. When threes when they're living in their woundedness, they tend to see the end as justifying the means. I mean, they just, whatever it takes to get there, that's what they can do. When they're working out of their health and in their wholeness, they work with integrity, and the integrity of a project is more important than the success of a project. When threes are living in their woundedness, they spend enormous amounts of time and effort accomplishing things so others will see them as successful. And when they're living out of their health, they spend probably the same amount of time, but they do it for the sheer joy of doing it because that's their gift. That's what God has given them. It's just the ability to get things done, to do things, to build things, to run things, to whatever. Just get things done. Any questions about this, twos and threes, that anyone wants to? Please feel free to interject here. I'm trying to figure out how much time. How are we doing? It's 25 after 6. We got to get moving. What? Starts at 7. We got to be out of here by 7. Okay. Fours are a very interesting and complicated type. They're the most emotional of all the types. You just always know what a four is feeling. I mean, they just feel all over the place. And pores are given the gift of creativity. They're given the gift of being unique and wonderful. But that gift, of course, is all of our gifts. It gets twisted and it gets covered up and it gets distorted and it gets misshapen. And what comes out is somebody who is much more interested in being unusual, being special, than in being genuinely creative. One of the friends that I have, who's a four, I was throwing this retreat, and just in the middle of the retreat, she just stood up and just told me off, and then left. And I was like, whoa. I mean, I was just devastated. I mean, I'm like one of these smiley face balloons and, you know, just smile, and then one little prick and shh, you know. But fours, when they're not very healthy, they have that ability to just take over a room in some way can you describe it better than I am?
Well, they take the energy into themselves.
Yeah.
And determine then the energy that's in the room. And you can read a four really quite quickly. You will see their face is very telling. How they carry their bodies is very telling.
Yeah.
And you will know if they're up, if they're ready, if they're healthy, or if they are melancholy.
Yeah, they love to be sad, and they love sad stories.
Yeah.
So if you sat on the airplane with a four, you would find out how they'd
been crying.
By
the end of the runway, you're in tears.
Yeah. They were abused as children, and their whole life has been wretched because of that abuse. And, you know, life just tends to be a sort of a chronic sad story. I work with a lot of writers. And the writing community tends to attract four energy. Nancy, a little bit difficult to work with sometimes.
Occasionally.
And fours, when they're healthy, could be just so incredibly wonderful and so creative and so gifted. But it's a hard energy to live with and work with because they're so emotional. Ingmar Bergman, Judy Garland, Tennessee Williams, Soren Kierkegaard, Albert Camus. Does that kind of give you an idea of?
Makes me depressed.
Yes. I have a niece named Carla, who is 41 years old now, or 40 years old now, and has been in about four different primary relationships. Once to a Norwegian who needed to get citizenship in the United States, and she was just passionately in love with him and got him over here, and then they got divorced. Once to a Ghanaian bongo drummer, and once to
mainstream people.
Yes, mainstream. I mean, she just had this instinct for finding the most unlikely characters to fall in love with, but it made her special, and then it gave her a sad story to tell. Because she was always at a crisis. You know, her parents would try to go on a trip and she would get into some terrible crisis and they'd have to cancel out and not go. And, you know, it was just crisis. When she was just the last two or three years, she has begun to work very hard on herself. And she became interested in the Enneagram because her mother was so interested. And she thought she was a five because she's very, very bright. And she was sort of a five wannabe, which is what her mother is. But she also had this sort of deep resistance to thinking she was anything. So she would always say, well, I'm sort of a five, but I really don't like those other fives. I'm much more like, well, I'm sort of a seven, and I love, you know, this kind of energy. and when she settled on being a four, what that did was to say, yes, you have been given a gift of creativeness and uniqueness, but you are a part of a group. And you are not so special, honey, because there's a whole lot of you out there, you know? And for a four to really accept that is to step into the world in a healthy way, because they just quit needing to be so special. And so the Enneagram has been an extremely helpful tool for several types, for varieties of reasons, but especially for fours, because if they can accept that they are a typable person, what they have said is, I'm not so special. I really am a part of the world. I really am not so different from everybody. I really can, you know, get in a relationship with a normal person. And now she's fallen in love with somebody we just adore. I mean, he is so normal, you can't believe it. And he really likes her, and, you know, it's just a good relationship. And we never thought it would happen. But it's been just a wonderful journey for her. And all along the way, she's doing incredible things. I mean, she teaches Montessori, and she loves her children, and she nurtures them, and she teaches dance, and she gets everybody up dancing, and she loves to put on shows, and she puts on dramas, and she's always doing something. You know, just very creative, very energetic person. That's four energy. Got a picture? Some noted, oh, I've already gone through those fours, okay. When fours are living in their woundedness, they enjoy basking in the, I think it's the six D's, depression, devastation, disdain, disappointment, drama, and or deviancy. When they're living in their giftedness, they focus on what is positive in their life now and what is good about life in general, giving thanks to God for creating them as they are. And it's just, I mean, the difference is just enormous. And when fours are healthy, they are just really interesting and wonderful people. I guess I didn't mention this with the other ones. The core sin of the seven deadly sins, if you want to call it that, of a two is pride. I don't need anything. I know what you need, and I can give it to you. That's pride. And twos are such nice, nice, nice people, you would never think that their core sin was pride. But that's what it is. For three, the core sin is deceit. And again, it's, you know, I am successful, I need to be successful, I need to see you as successful, I am successful, I am successful, I am successful, I will not even notice anything that might, you know, interfere with that self-image. And so they lie to themselves, and they, in fact, lie to the world. They're the people that would be apt to fake a resume, you know, add a few kudos to their resume and so on. Fours, the core sin is envy. And they get into that because they feel such sadness and such tragic specialness. And they look out at all the rest of the world and they see people that look like they're happy. They see people that have things. They see people that have normal relationships. And the grass always looks greener on the other side. So when they get what they think they want, it always disappoints them finally, and somebody else has something that would be better. And that envy thing is just core to a form. And so that's this triad, the heart triad, the feeling triad, the people that have, the fours give enormous power to other people to see them as special, the threes to see them as successful, and the twos to see them as helpful. So they all give power to other people to see them as something. Does that make sense? Okay. What? I gotta go faster. The next triad is the head triad, and these people have their energy in their heads. It's the thinking. And they're called the fear base. So fear is kind of a thinking process, and that's the core thing that underlies all three of these types is fear, in the same way that anxiety about image is core here. Their energy is in their head, not their hearts, and they just do a lot of thinking. Now, we're not talking about intelligence. You can have a person over here with an IQ of 180. It doesn't mean, but their energy is in their heart. You see what I'm saying? And it doesn't mean that these people are smart, but it's just their energy's in their head. It's not in their heart. Fives tend to be people like Albert Einstein, Emily Dickinson, Bill Gates, Ursula Le Guin. How many of you know her work? Very complicated, very theoretical, very interesting writing. If you listen to a 5, 6, 7 talk, you hear a lot of think language. I think, I understand, I reason. I mean, just all this kind of, they don't talk about I feel, they talk about I think, I understand. Fives, my sister Ruth is a five that has been my Enneagram buddy for going around and doing retreats. And the hilarious thing is that she is out in the Bay Area and has been able to go to probably a year altogether of weeks with Riso, weeks with Palmer, weekends here, weekends there, study, 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 do a year-long internship. She never thought she knew enough to teach. I read 2 books. I knew enough. I had it all. I could do it. And so she would come and to do these retreats with me, and even though she was the one that had tons more knowledge, it was really very hard for her to just get it out there, to say it. And she always, I mean, you know, these retreats would be 2 or 3 days long, and the energy that would take from her was just enormous. And she would just, when it was all over, she would just collapse, because people had just been taking her energy through this whole time, taking her thoughts and having to think. And her kids say about her, when the going gets tough, mom goes back to school. And or when the going gets tough, mom hides in her bedroom and reads a book. That's fiveness. The core sin is avarice, and that's kind of hard to understand. But it's that sense that of hoarding knowledge, of hoarding ideas, of holding up, of wanting to be self-sufficient, and fives, you know, they can be the kind of geeky academics in the academic world that never get their book published because they never know enough. The experts in one little area of the world. A healthy five will trust that God will always provide enough. An unhealthy five will always be fearful that I won't have enough energy. I won't have enough time. People are taking too much of my time. I won't have enough money. People are taking my money. I won't have enough ideas. I might be wrong about something. You know, I might not know what somebody wants me to know. I might not have the right information. I mean, all that fear base, is what sits under a five, and that they have to work with. They become, as they go more healthy, they become very thoughtful, very insightful, very active. They get out in the world. They tend to be observers, but they will become more participators and move out into the world. They tend to walk around like disembodied heads. And when they become healthier, they, whoa, I've got a body under here, you know? Maybe I should do something with it. So they become more embodied as they become healthier. So that's kind of fiveness. And I'm going to let Roy talk about sixness, because that's what he is.
Could you say again?
Six's great fear is being alone. And so what sixes do is that they create in their heads all kinds of people and use those people as authorities so they won't feel alone. Sixes love institutions, because in institutions you never have to be alone, right? So I have somebody else there. And the big conflict that the six has, pardon me, the big issue for a six is the issue of authority. Who are my authorities? The first night we chuckled when Mary told the story about me when our second son asked me, how come you've been so faithful to Mom in these 4 years? And she was looking for some great man because she's such a magnificent, wonderful, marvelous, beautiful, gorgeous, enlightened, joyful person. And my response was, I've been so faithful because I believe in a faithful God. You know? It took the steam right out of the audience. You know what that is? You should have seen the steam
that
took
out
of her. You should have seen the steam that took out of her when I said it originally. Because I'm so conscious of authority. And my great gift is faithfulness. The great gift of a six is faithfulness and loyalty. And so I quoted my authority. God. And I did that in such a way that it came right out of here, you see. Sixes are, in this head group, are least of all people in this grouping in touch with their feelings. The least in touch with their feelings. We have to work at that. And that's what I've had to work at for a long time. I think if my son asked the question today, I might answer it a little differently than I did at that point. But authority and being a part of people, because I fear being alone, because I'm insecure in myself. And so where can I find my security? I find security in all these people. In the church. Ah, wonderful. We've got all these authority figures. We've got all these groups. And I will create in my own head all this committee. If it's an issue related to family, that comes up, instead of making a decision myself, I will consult all these authority figures on family in my head. And then I will get all of their resources, and then I'll make a decision. That's how I do it. If it's an issue related to the congregation, I was like, okay, now, what Ruth is a 3 in business industry. What is Ruth going to think? How would she look at this? What about Ron Taylor, the president of the congregation? Okay? What about the associate pastors? And I will go through and I will do a group think. They don't have to be present. Because I know them, so I know where they're at. And then I will pull this all together and then make a decision. Because I'm not secure, you see, sufficiently to make the decision without some authority helping me out.
One of the real interesting insights we had into our marriage was that there are 2 Marys in his life. There's the me Mary, and there's the Mary in the head. And the Mary in the head is saying things to him all the time. I don't have a clue what that Mary is saying. And so he responds.
And you're never going to know.
And so he responds to me based on what the Mary in his head is saying and doing. I was like, where is this coming from?
So here I am. I'm a 6, and I'm insecure in myself. And I need all of this authority, and I need institutions and family, and I need these other groups of people because I really work them hard. They don't know how hard I'm working them in order to help me through this. But I am what is known as a counterphobic 6. When I'm afraid at times, I will run up against that authority and I will confront it. And I will argue with it, and I will attempt to beat it. And I get in a lot of trouble that way. And bishops don't like that. I mean, they really don't. To go to the bishop's office, and all of a sudden you're nose to nose, eyeball to eyeball, and you're red from here up because we're both in the head triad, you see. So we're red from here up. And fortunately I've had graceful bishops who, they realize a thing, And you fly in the face of it. You question everything. You question authority. If you're my authority, I'm gonna question everything about you. I won't just take it at face value. because I'm counterfolded. I'll question that. I question God all the time. I'm the pastor. I'm not supposed to question God. I do. Fly in the face. The devil's advocate. Somebody mentioned the devil's advocate last night. That's me. I will give you a worst case scenario. You come up with a statement, and I will question your authority, and I'll give you everything that can go wrong about that. I'll argue with you.
Wouldn't he be fun to work with?
Yeah. I'm a delight. But when I don't mask, use my faithfulness as mask, then I'm free to really be faithful out of joy and delight. And that's part of the wonder of being a saint. And it's grand.
One of my friends in a Shalom group was a phobic six, Karen, who was a totally competent person, absolutely competent, and yet always questioned what she was doing and was afraid to ask for raises, was afraid to get promotions, was afraid to move in her jobs because she was fearful. I mean, she was very recognizing of her fears. So sixes can seem timid also. They can seem like eights, strong, powerful, or they can seem very timid. So sixes are a very interesting group of people, and yet all of them have to have some issue with authority, either needing it, accepting it, wanting to be a part of a structure, butting up against it, fearful of it, whatever it is. It's all wrapped around authority.
Let me give a quick example. I have a spiritual director, a wonderful non-Catholic nun from these Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration. I meet with her once a month. I go to her and I'll sit down with Lucille, and she'll remind me, Roy, during this hour we're together, I never want to hear you say, I think. She'll insist on me using body feeling language, because I'm out of touch with my feelings, and she knows that, and so intentionally helps me to get in touch with my feelings.
Okay. I don't think we have time to talk about seven, so we'll just move on.
Maybe somebody else.
You know anybody who's flaky? It's a seven.
Oh, seven.
Before you, what's the sin of a six?
The sin of a six is fear.
Fear.
Cowardice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you do courage. So nobody will know you're afraid.
Yeah.
In addition to whistling
in the dark, yeah. The sin of a seven is gluttony, and that gluttony can take a lot of forms. Because the deep fear is that you're not enough. That somehow I'm not enough, I will therefore never have enough, I will never be good enough, I will never do enough. It's just that deep, deep fear. A lot of sevens will never, ever admit that that's there. I mean, they simply have blocked it. It's just, they're too busy having fun. They just have blocked all that. Yes? Is all we have left altogether? Okay. Okay, famous sevens. John Kennedy, Steven Spielberg, Marianne Williamson. Do any of you know her work?
Yes.
All over the place, yeah. Carol Burnett, Bette Midler, Robin Williams. That's seven energy out there. Sevens are the people that have a mind that's like one of those little beanies with a helicopter on the top. Just and as long as you can keep going, as long as you can keep spinning, then you won't ever have to fall down. Because if you do, what you fear you're going to fall into is an abyss of pain that is so painful you will never get out. And you feel pain more than any other type, and therefore fear it more than any other type. And so anything you could do to stay out of that, you do. The gut triad up here. Eight sides and one. They've actually found out that there are neurosensory things in your intestinal tract that are like your brain neurosensory things, that there is an intelligence in your gut. So when you say you've got a gut feeling, when you know it in your gut, you do. You know it in your gut. It's a knowledge. It's real brain stuff. Anyway, these are the gut people. Their base is anger. And they do very different things with it. We'll just talk about it. Our son, Pear, is an 8, and I'll just tell you a quick 8 story to get an idea of what 8 energy is like. He was driving down Highway I-94 going into Minneapolis on a Sunday night after the first night of fishing, or the weekend of fishing season. How many of you know Minneapolis well enough to know what that would be like? Four lanes of traffic, everybody going 70 miles an hour, solid traffic all the way into the cities, right? Okay, so he's driving along, he's eating a sandwich, he's listening to rock music, and all of a sudden, out of the corner of his eye, he sees a deer leaping toward his car. Now, what would I have done? I would have slammed on the brakes, swerved the car, and there would have been a 100 car pileup, and I would not be here to talk to you tonight. But 8s have this gut instinct for survival. They are the people that in the evolution of the species were designed to save the tribe. You know, they just have a gut instinct for power and for survival. He whacked the deer, he didn't bat an eye, he drove 20 miles, he pulled safely off, he peeled the carcass off the front of his car, he got back in his car, and he drove home and finished his sandwich. You know? That's 8 energy. They're just what you see is what you get. They're just out there. And they're anger based, and they have the quickest, the most ready access to anger. They get angry, it's over, and they don't understand why other people are upset. Well, they don't have a clue that people are offended because they've just been told they're a stupid blah 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 blah, you know? Because they just speak the truth and that's it. 9s, just in absolute contrast, are the nicest people on the face of the earth. Dear Dan Erlander, how many of you have been going to the morning studies? It took him 30 seconds to place himself. He knew he was a 9, straight 9. Mr. Rogers, Perry Como, you know, just, I mean, people who just are nice people. The problem with 9s is that, the sin under an 8 is lust, just a passion for life. They want more. Under a 9, it's sloth. And 9s can just slide into losing themselves if they're not healthy. They just merge into other people. You don't know who they are if they're not healthy. They don't get things done, they procrastinate, we've been working on this project, which has been a fascinating thing, the 7 Nilsons writing a book together, editing each other's material. And two of them are 9s. And one of them, a little bit healthier at the moment than the other, so one of them met all the deadlines, the other one never met a single deadline. And of course, my instinct was to cover for her, to write things for her, and to just, you know, make it okay, be a mom. And everybody else would say, hey, she contracted, she's got 12 to do, make her do them, and, you know, this is fair. And just kind of that interesting energy going on. Abraham Lincoln is a 9, Ronald Reagan, Mr. Rogers, Garrison Keillor, the saga. You know, 9s tell sagas. They just go on. I mean, just that kind of whimsical, wonderful storytelling kind of nature is 9-ish. Did I tell you who the 8s were? Martin Luther King Jr., Indira Gandhi, Barbara Walters, Donald Trump, Jim Jones, Idi Amin, and Milosevic, probably, you know, power people. Okay. And now, do we have time? You got a kid up there?
No.
Giving you nuts? Okay. Sobe is going to tell us a little bit about 1, so you just get a little bit of a...
Well, a brief portrait of a 1, I guess,
when yesterday somebody said, what's the highest compliment? I didn't really want to say it, but somebody else said it and I agreed, which was, you're perfect. And really for a one, anything less than that is really not enough, essentially, is what it comes down to. Anger is our gut thing, and but we judge it as being wrong and inappropriate, and so we repress it because it's wrong. I told a group of friends once that I actually have a very wild and passionate spirit, but I've led a very appropriate life because that's what ones do. They lead very appropriate lives. But it's terrifying for one to be wrong, to do something inappropriate, to look foolish. Any of that is just, it's like dying. It's like dying for one. I could tell a lot of stories about this, but one story is this past fall, I'm a pastor, and I've tried to accept, you know, the general mistakes that people make, myself, you know, included and whatnot, but one of the mistakes that I couldn't, that wasn't allowed for me to make, was to forget somebody's name on All Saints Sunday. You read the names of the people who have died in the past year, and that, absolutely not. You don't forget anybody. That's an unforgivable sin. So this past year, a man had died in our congregation a whole year before. He didn't have a funeral service. I remember that he, you know, I had met with his son and daughter-in-law and whatnot. I forgot his name. I forgot to read his name. And I didn't even know during the whole service. And afterwards, somebody had pointed it out. And wouldn't you know that that was the one Sunday that his son was there. And he was sitting in the front row. And I died. I literally died. There was just a huge part of me that said, you don't even deserve to live after this. It was so serious. That's how serious I took it. And what happened then, but see, I also can't be angry as a one because it's wrong. And so I felt absolutely bereft about this. So, well, I'm Sandu. So I went up to his son, and I thought, oh my gosh, I have to make amends immediately because I have done this. And I went up to him, and he was wearing this a three-piece suit. And I came up to him, and I took him by the like I was mad at him, right? But I was saying, I am sorry, I am so sorry. I mean, I was just pleading with him for forgiveness. But this is how angry I was with myself. I was so angry with myself. But I couldn't show it in any other way. But it just came out.
I am so sorry.
Right, right, exactly. Please forgive me. Still gonna need for me to church this Sunday. So ones live with a sort of a relentless critic that's going on all the time. But I guess the grace of it is that since putting myself in this place and understanding myself, I, for the first time in my life, really know what forgiveness is. Because prior to understanding my place and how anger and this sort of relentless critic that was going on inside of me, I never ever forgave myself, ever. Because there's never enough justification to forgive yourself as a one. But understanding myself in this as a one, I'm finally able to actually accept God's forgiveness. And lo and behold, I am loved and made perfect at the same time.
We've run out of time. We've run over time, in fact, and I'm sorry I've kept you late. The hymn sing is ready to go. So we shouldn't have had to do this so fast, but we did it. And we'll see you tomorrow when we'll talk about the wings and the arrows and the subtypes and, oh, it's a complicated business. Take care.